I have always loved playing baseball and softball. As a kid, I was proud of the fact that the boys didn't mind having me on their team. I could throw the ball as fast and hard as any of them. A couple years back ago, both my families come from a little town called Pigeon, Michigan, which is about this size of Reed City. And every summer, I would go, and all my cousins were there, and we would play ball all day long. I was the only girl on the team. A couple years back, my uncle died, and we all gathered together, and most of those folks still are in town. They all gathered at the funeral home, and every time my cousin would introduce me, he always introduced me, "This is Dawn. Remember, she played ball with us." In our Midland church, we had a co-ed softball team. And again, loving to play the sport. However, there, I was made poke fun of in how I run playing the game. In fact, they made a video of me, and all you can see are feet standing, it's somebody else doing it. And they had the diamond, and they had the 12 months of the year all through the diamond, and it took me that long to get to home plate. I enjoyed my years playing co-ed softball here at St. Paul, and for some years, we were pretty good. But I remember one Sunday, one of my teammates happened to be ushering that Sunday, and as I was walking down the aisle, he said to me, "Hit a home run, Pastor. That's what every pastor wants to do every time they step into the pulpit. I wish I could say that every sermon that I've ever given was a home run, or at least maybe a triple. Unfortunately, it is not the case, and there have been some times I feel that I have really kind of struck out." In reading our second lesson today, Paul's letter to the Corinthian church, I think he understood. I'm sure there were times he wondered, did he get his message across? Time and time again, he reminds them the message he proclaimed is simple, yet life-changing. And that message is still the same today. Christ died for my sins to redeem me. His life paid in full the cost of my salvation. That whole drama of God's love is summed up in John 3:16, "For God so loved the world." And the hymn that everybody loves, "Amazing Grace," perhaps is most revealing in this line, "I was blind, but now I see." You and I will never, as long as we live, and no matter how old we are in our Christian walk, we will never fully grasp God's grace completely. But to grasp even a portion of what God's grace is all about is to have a new way of seeing life. Let me be more concise. When I begin to understand that without God's grace, I would be lost, I am moved to live my life with new eyes. New eyes, I see that I am a forgiven sinner. You see, without God's grace, I don't even understand that I need to be forgiven. With new eyes, I can be a positive influence in my world for the building up of the kingdom. Before I recognize God's grace, I don't recognize I have a purpose and I can make a difference. With new eyes, I understand that God is the giver of all things, from the very air that I breathe to the gifts of Robert and Aaron and this church family. With new eyes, I understand I have received blessings upon blessings, and I feel a joy when giving back to God. And know what I do now as his kingdom worker, others will carry on. Indeed, the good news is so simple and yet so life-changing. For the believer, that's what we call is a rhythm of faith. First God acts, and then we respond. The rhythm of faithfulness. In the Old Testament, in the giving of the Ten Commandments, There's two ways of looking at them. 10 hard rules that you better obey, or as 10 virtues that God's people live out because they have a special relationship with their God. To me, it's quite clear God intends for the latter. Because remember how the commandments begin. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of captivity. God first states the reason for giving the commandments. You and I are no longer slaves. I assure you, you are my very own. Therefore, this is how you will live. God always deals with his people in the framework of the relationship that he has established with them. God never says, if you do this, I will love you. No. First he acts. He did this for you and me in the person of Jesus Christ, who died for our sake. Just as he freed the Israelites from slavery in Egypt, he frees us from the power of sin through Jesus' death and resurrection. Our three lessons today challenge us in three aspects of our faith walk. In Exodus, we are challenged to live a life worthy of being called people of God. As a people of God, how we honor God and treat our neighbor cannot be separated. Simply put, we cannot say with our lips we love and serve our God and then gossip or label our neighbors. Second lesson, Paul calls to respond that the wisdom of the world is false wisdom. Don't try to use worldly wisdom to be the church. The formula won't work because God brings to each situation a dimension that is beyond our ability to calculate. Where reason leaves off, faith picks up. To put it in a very practical sense, we have a history together. Think about it. Worldly wisdom would say how foolish it was for us to think that we could build a $1.2 million structure on this hill. But remember our reasoning for building. It was to further God's kingdom, his mission, and we trusted if it was God's will, it was going to happen. And walking step by step, we were open to his spirit among us. And God was able to accomplish what we could not do on our own. In the gospel lesson, Jesus cleanses the temple. The religious leaders had lost sight of God's mission. The temple had become a place to meet their needs, not God's. And no one, not even that popular rabbi, was going to change things. Their temple, and that's what it became, their temple, not God's. I find it interesting that in John's gospel, this particular incident happens at the beginning of his ministry, where Matthew, Mark, and Luke put it at the end of Jesus' ministry. And most scholars will say, well, John's purpose was a theological, not a historical. The other gospel writers, the text ends where the religious leaders don't actually confront Jesus, but we read that after the event, they conspire to kill him. In today's gospel, they come out and ask Jesus, what is it? By what authority? What sign are you doing what you're doing? And Jesus gives them the sign, but they don't understand. Destroy this temple, and in 3 days, I will rise it up. When John wrote his gospel, there was trouble in the local church. An arrogance was growing, like the arrogance of the religious leaders that Jesus taught. The focus of the church should always be mission and ministry, not simply what is comfortable to us, but having a vision for what our mission and ministry ought to be. And it ought to be God's vision to allow us to have a new way of seeing. Amen.